Mira Bartuk, an artist, essayist, and the author of 28 children's books, began work on her latest project as a series of paintings which she hoped would allow her to evoke the mental landscapes of a childhood in which she was raised by a schizophrenic mother. That grew into a book called The Memory Palace, a memoir. It's published by the Free Press. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hi.
Hi.
So what does the title of your book, Memory Palace, mean?
It's a word or a phrase that comes from the Renaissance. It was a system, a mnemonic system of trying to fix memories by creating a palace of memories in your head by affixing each event or a person or something you want to recall to an image, a painting or an object.
That's the way some people actually can memorize a long string of different things. Magicians do that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But in your case, it's partly because you had had a car accident and a trauma to the brain?
Yeah, I had what's called a mild traumatic brain injury. It's similar to what a lot of people coming back from the war are experiencing with IEDs exploding, except they have this explosion going through their body. But it's not actually a mild. It's only considered mild because of the I wasn't out unconscious that long, but it still had lasting effects.
So how did you go about building this memory palace?
I started out by sketching. And
did you remember things, or did you have to try to retrieve things through other sources? Research your own life.
I used a lot of photographs. I started searching for paintings online that I remembered from the Cleveland Museum of Art, where we grew up in Cleveland. And I started looking just at a lot of ephemera that I had from my past, and then just started thinking about what images were the strongest to me.
And then your mother started coming back into focus?
My long-term memory in many ways was okay. It's just there were some very important events that seemed to have disappeared, which is very unusual with traumatic brain injury. But I think probably because I had a lot of trauma growing up, that exacerbated the situation.
Your mother had been a piano prodigy, but that was before you were aware of you were old enough to even know what was going on?
Yeah, she was apparently quite gifted. And her first psychotic episode with schizophrenia began or occurred when she was 19 in music conservatory.
Mm. But then how old were you when it became apparent that she was continuing to have problems?
I think that I just thought that her behavior was normal. And then my first memory of her acting very strangely was when I was 5. But, of course, that's my first memory. I might have noticed something before, but I don't recall.
And where was your father?
Our father, he left my mother and father divorced when I was 4. And so,
do you think it was because of her mental problems?
You know, I suspect that he also had a lot of problems too, because he was an alcoholic, and he was a brilliant writer, but he had a lot of his own issues, and he just sort of disappeared, and I didn't see him again I never saw him again, and I found out in 1986 that he had died in 1980.
Mm. Well, how did your mother support you? You had an older sister as well.
She was just a year older. She is just a year older. Our mother tried to get temp jobs, but she was so ill. She also tried teaching piano. And then she went on public assistance. And my grandmother helped out a little bit. Our grandparents helped out a little bit.
They lived nearby.
They lived nearby. Yeah.
Did they fully comprehend the extent of your mother's illness, do you think?
No. My grandfather was pretty uneducated and didn't really understand what mental illness was, and he was also probably a pretty disturbed person himself. He was kind of a violent person and had a lot of anger issues. And my grandmother, she didn't really have a lot of compassion for my mother. I think she had a lot of troubles of her own and didn't really understand. You know, we were very ignorant about schizophrenia back then, almost as ignorant as we are now. So,
but it was even more taboo
oh,
subject
yeah.
then than it is now. In the 60s, sure. People would not admit to it. You try to covered up. But you say that you just thought it was normal, obviously, because that's the way your mother was. When did you realize that it was atypical?
I don't recall the exact time, but I was little and I remember visiting friends and seeing that their parents had sit-down meals and they ate, their mothers cooked, and the dads went, you know, the 60s, their dads went off to their job and nobody, you know, the mothers weren't talking to themselves. And
else was happening in your home? Your mother wasn't cooking for you?
She really tried, but it was very difficult for her, and she didn't really have, she went to cooking classes, actually, when we had a recovery center in our neighborhood until it was shut down during the Reagan era. But she did learn some life skills then, but no, there was usually no food in the house.
She was also institutionalized.
Many times, yeah.
And what happened when she was sent off? You go with your grandparents?
We would go with our grandparents, and our mother would, you know, get the treatment that you got during that time, which was mostly extreme bouts of shock treatment.
But it didn't seem to work. When did you realize that she was never going to get better or be cured?
We had a big turning point in 1990 when my mother, it's a long story, you have to read the book, but my grandmother ended up getting placed in elder care, and my mother it was clear she was going to be on her own, and we tried to get a legal guardian for her a couple times, and we were turned down by the courts because my mother apparently could take care of herself because she could buy her own cigarettes and cash her own checks. And and there was a violent.
And the fact that she'd been institutionalized.
Didn't matter that. It didn't matter. And in fact, recently, as recent as several years ago, and she was still alive, and the organization that was sort of wonderfully helping my mother in Cleveland, and they run the shelter she lived in, they also tried to get guardianship, and they lost as well, even though they had lots of documentation.
She had been homeless.
She was really, really ill. She was, you know, 80 years old, and she could cash her own checks and buy her own cigarettes.
Mira Bartuk's latest book is nothing like the children's book she's written. This one is called The Memory Palace, a memoir. It's published by Free Press. And this isn't the book you set out to write. Why and how did it change?
I started writing really more a book of essays about the things that connected my mother, connected us, our shared passions, because we had a lot in common. Our brains weren't so dissimilar. It's just that she edged into insanity. But we both had a lot of connections with music and art and literature. But I realized that it just felt like it was a larger book than essays, and it needed to have an arc. And then I found out my mother was dying.
You'd been out of touch for a while, hadn't you?
We wrote each other through post office boxes across the country for 17 years. And then toward the end of her life, I found that she was living in a shelter, and ultimately I found that she was dying, and I went to see her.
But then you also discovered she had a storage locker.
Yes.
And that's really important to this book.
Very important, because I had no idea what was in there, and when I opened it toward the end of her life, I discovered 17 years of diaries that my mother kept.
Were they lucid?
Not really. They were, but some parts were, and she also was studying all kinds of subjects. Anatomy, poetry, fairy tales, the geology, all kinds of subjects. So there was a lot of sort of erudite material in there that was really she wrote about. But also they were brilliantly written and really beautiful and hallucinatory, very strange.
Did you feel comfortable reading them?
I devoured them. I felt very comfortable. In that I felt like it was okay for me to do that. And some of the passages in there I saw repeated in the letters that she wrote me. So that was unusual. And I wondered if she thought of me when she was writing them part of the time. But I made sure that I stopped reading them at 5 p.m. so I wouldn't have nightmares.
Can you talk about the effect being raised by a schizophrenic had on your memory and your comprehension of the truth?
That's a really good question. I think that when you are a child of a parent who's schizophrenic, you often doubt what is real or not. She sometimes would tell me things that I wasn't sure. You know, like I saw this person, or she would say, Sammy Davis Jr. wants to marry me. I'll see if I'll get a better offer. And she would say it with such conviction that I didn't know what to think. And so, and sometimes she said things that were very true. It's just I was always doubting. So that was, you know, a little bit difficult.
Well, we all have problems with memories of the past. If you take two siblings and ask them about what happened in a certain event, you'll get very different stories. In this case, you have the added problem of somebody who, a parent, your parental figure, being somebody you couldn't trust.
Right.
So that had to affect your memories. Most of us will say something like, I'm not sure this actually happened to me, or if it's something that was – whether I remember it or whether somebody told it to me. And in your case, you have this added problem of your car accident, having had a schizophrenic mother. And so the paintings, which you included in this book, were a way of working all of that out?
What we know now is that, you know, there is no memory palace. Memories are not fixed. They constantly change. And that every time – neuroscientists say that every time we retrieve a memory – our brains actually structurally change in the retelling. And I also knew that I couldn't – as soon as I built a palace in my mind, I'd forget it because I just don't have the mnemonic powers that some people might. So I made a giant Renaissance palace facade on my studio wall and made these images that kind of emerge from arches and doorways and – and so, yes, it would each time I went to my studio and looked at that painting and continued to work on it, it would bring more and more memories up. And it was, I think, a very good exercise in recall.
You also had photographs. And then you also had your mother's paintings. Your mother also painted.
Yes. She was very much a naive painter and drawer, you know, and her work looks very self-taught, very primitive. But she says, and she said in her diaries that she drew to stop the voices, and she, you know, she no longer had a piano with her. So, although she, one thing I discovered in her storage unit was she carried around in a lot of books and a lot of things, she made a Xerox copy of a piano keyboard, and I wonder if she sat there and imagined herself playing. I'll never know, but I like to think she did.
Do you think that you have a pretty clear picture of what actually happened when you were growing up? What happened to your mother and what was going on in her mind?
I think that I understand her a bit better, and perhaps I understand her much more now that I deal with some of the after effects of TBI. You know, a lot of some of the largest problems I have to do with endurance.
What is TBI?
TBI, traumatic brain injury. Mm-hmm. So dealing with overstimulation of sound, other sounds coming in when you're trying to talk to someone, talking on the phones, listening is really hard. And I know that that's so minor compared to what my mother, I think, told me once that she felt like there were voices coming in from every single electrical outlet, every single house on the block. So if you imagine that's And you don't know, and she didn't know if they were true or not. Are they real? So,
did she ever work that out? What was she like in her last days?
In her last days, you know, my mother was very medicated, and she was also dying, and so that she was actually very, very sweet and very peaceful because my mother was that way when she wasn't going through a psychotic episode. But I asked her social worker, you know, how delusional he felt she was. And he said she was probably about 90-95% delusional most of the time.
There are always the fears when there is mental illness in the family of the genetic aspect of it. Did you and your sister feel like there was a sword hanging over your heads?
You know, I never did. My sister did. And then we pass that period where most, you know, it tends to rear its head in teenage years and early 20s. And I think my sister got over that fear. But now I never feared it for some reason. I probably should have, but I didn't.
Mira Bartuk is the author of 28 books for children. Her writings appeared in several literary journals and anthologies, has been noted in the Best American Essays series. Her latest book is a memoir called The Memory Palace. It is published by Free Press. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.